Hey, everybody, welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm the John Locke of Game of Thrones.
And welcome to the show. I'm guessing that's Jon Snow?
No.
Ooh, who's Jon Locke?
Are you Varys?
No. Who's the terrible leader?
You're going to say Khaleesi?
Yeah, but she's all about bowing in front of her. Hey, win the war first.
Exactly. You got to earn respect.
Yeah,
you got
to earn it.
But there's also, as a female leader, she probably has to like really reinforce
her greatness. Well, you got three dragons, and you got all these troops, and you've butchered the battle so far.
Well, because she was playing. It's a noble angle, which she was approaching, but she's out of options now, for sure.
You're playing a war with no rules, right? It's war.
Right.
It's kill or be killed, and she's being killed. She blew it. Sorry, yeah. You're fired.
Well, she might take the Queen of Thorns advice. Maybe next episode or the one after, because she told her to be a dragon, and so far she's been listening to Tyrion. And
Tyrion is smart, but he's, let's face it, he got outwitted, outplayed.
He's not a general.
The tribe has spoken.
Because he wouldn't have won the Battle of the Blackwater either if it hadn't been for her father.
But I mean, really,
Cersei's father. I mean,
he had the nuclear bomb the green stuff. was it again?
Yeah,
dragons.
Wildfire. That was a big thing. But remember, they were at the gates. He almost got killed himself, and it wasn't for
the Tyrell army, right?
Yeah, it wasn't for the Lannisters came in and saved the day at the end. His father, but I'm saying, he's not a million. I mean, he did do good, but it wasn't all
She has smart people around her.
Yes, she does.
But you have overwhelming. You have the troops. You have the army. You have three dragons. What are you waiting? It's unfortunately, war is all about collateral damage, and you have to just.
I get it. I'm not trying to, say she still got to take it slow, but she had all the advantage, so she could play it slow, and now she can't.
No, she blew it.
She blew it.
Like I said, she's too worried about, you must bow before me, take a knee, Jon Snow, please take a knee.
Yeah, and that's what I don't get. That's what bothered me a lot about this episode, was just the arrogance of Dany. It's like, if I was Jon, I'd be like, you just got here, lady. Who do you think you are? Like, yeah, you have three dragons. If you didn't have the dragons, you'd be nothing.
I'm the bastard of the North.
Yeah. Because you see that with Davos. Like, Davos tries to make almost says that for him. It's like, this man earned respect. This man united people. Like, what have you done?
But in fairness to Dany, like, from where she came from, she earned, she was from nothing. Like, she had
She was able, she's the mother of dragons.
But without
the dragons.
But go back to her story. Like, and she even said it. Where, she goes into the flames with the eggs. We assume she's just burning herself alive because she's lost everything. But she's born anew with these dragons, and she's had a lot of struggles along the way, but she's come from nothing, too. All right. I don't want to discount Dany's growth either.
I'm going to throw this out here. You got to back one person to take you into battle. Jon Snow or Khaleesi?
I'm not as my leader, but I'm going to go with Dany because she gets three dragons.
Yeah,
we're going to battle. But,
all right, so far she's blown it.
But again, she inspired the Dothraki to cross the sea for the first time.
Yeah, but he got the wildling. The wildlings.
But I'm saying, I think they both have similar arcs. I would say
Jon Snow knows, but Jon Snow knows about battle. In fact, he even said, I think he said in this episode, he doesn't like to kill. He hates that part of he knows how to do it. She does. She doesn't.
She's
all
dragons
about,
and like burnt people.
If I got these dragons, everyone's gonna bow before me, and everything will be peachy
green. I don't think. I get it. Like, Dany was annoying, but I also think that we're shortchanging her achievements too. Because I think if you look at both Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen, they both have had a parallel rags to riches story for them.
Well, that's what makes their stories interesting. But I'm sorry.
I agree that they have extremely similar parallel stories, but whereas in Jon Snow came from nothing, as he was born a bastard, he came from nothing. He went to the Night's Watch, which is basically a death sentence for most people, and then he's risen himself up. Yeah, he had some advantage because of the fact that he was Ned Stark's son. But that's really about it. Whereas in Dany was nothing, and she was nothing until the dragons were born.
Right.
And then everyone helped her because she had dragons or out of fear of it. So, I mean, there's just a difference. I mean, hers is more of an entitled kind of...
And she has freed slaves. I mean, she's done a lot of amazing things. But I think at one point her ego needs to step back and say, okay, I'm not doing this right.
Yeah.
Let me put someone in charge who has military experience that knows what they're doing. Everyone that's advising her, do they have military experience?
But that was also one of the neat parallel things of the episode, whereas when Tyrion's trying to say, just bend the knee, what does it take? And he goes, I'm sorry, I'm not. You know, he goes, well, and why should I? You know, it's like, I'm sorry, but I don't know you. And then it's flipped on its head a few scenes later when he's asking Tyrion, what did I do wrong? Why won't people believe me? And he said, you're both real similar. You're both protectors. He goes, but why should she fight an army she doesn't know from a man she doesn't, or hasn't seen from a man she doesn't know? And it's the same logic in that, like, neither one of them are going to trust each other because they don't know each other.
That part I agree with her. If I've never seen The Walking Dead, not The Walking Dead, The White Walkers, I'm going to be hesitant to go, I'm going to throw all my, well, let's go fight them. But everything else, she's getting advice from people who are not warriors.
Right.
And she's trying to do it the PC way, and it's not working.
All right. We've talked about it a bit here, but let's save that for our recap, and we'll dig into it. But we want to thank people that make this show possible, our patrons over patreon.com/JandJack. Become a patron today. All of our podcasts are listener supported, so if you enjoy what we do, head on over to jandjack.com and click on the Become a Patron link today. We do have a fantastic recap written by Nicholas Dunn. So, Nick, let's always, take it away.
I got to say right now, this is always my favorite part of the podcast.
Yeah. Okay. Good one, Jack. Okay. I'll take it away. So, the episode starts with a wave crashing on Dragonstone, and Jon Snow and Davos are approaching the shore with some of Dothraki warriors and Tyrion and Missandei awaiting them.
That was a quick sail ride or a boat ride.
Exactly.
But I think we talked about before, I like the pace they have now. I mean, who wanted to see him sail over the seven seas 100, for three episodes? No, I like the pace.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I know you're against it, Nick, but at this point, we're down to what? There's four episodes left after? And seven more after this, so 11 more episodes ago. They don't have time to sail this. They need to get to where the destination is.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, it's the same thing, though, as with, the Unsullied and the Greyjoy. They all went back to the Iron Islands, basically the Iron Islands, but they're right there at Casterly Rock. You know, it's one episode. It's like, wow, like, time and geography does not matter to this show anymore. It just... But anyway, I regret.
Well, if they would have taken their time, maybe they wouldn't have got caught in the ambush.
Mm-hmm. It's a trap. But anyway, I thought this was a bit of an awkward exchange between Tyrion and Jon Snow. It was kind of a bit of humor, but then the tense moment of just this whole, the bastard of Winterfell and, the, whatever you call him, the dwarf of Casterly Rock. And it was just like, okay. But...
I thought it was some good ribbing there. It's, it's a little... you haven't seen someone along. Hey, how the hell are you?
But it's not like they were friends, though. So that's, that's something like if you actually were friends for a long time, you could kind of like insult them like that. But
I think they respected each other. It's more of a respect thing I got.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I could be wrong.
The introduction that I thought was actually the most interesting one of this exchange was between Davos and Tyrion. Because he's like, the Onion Knight, we fought against each other at the Battle of the Blackwater. And you would think that Davos would have been a little bitter at Tyrion over this because he did lose his son in that whole...
That's right, that's true.
And he didn't say a word. And I wonder if that's just because he's a night now, and he thinks war is just war, you know, and that people lose. But still, like, he'd be a little mad at the fact that here's the guy that orchestrated the death of his son.
Was he that close to his son?
Are you close to your son?
Well, you know, but I think
we have our answer.
No, if I'm trying to save the world, it's like, okay, I feel bad.
Would Davos or Davos, Sir Davos, put a lot of the blame on that on Melisandre, right? Not Melisandre,
right.
That's true, he did. Yeah.
Well, wasn't he against attacking at the point, too? Wasn't he saying we should wait?
That's what he's saying, yeah. And then the Red Priest is like, no, go for it.
I can kill the daughter. Everything's going to be fine.
No, that was later, but...
I know, but still. But anyway, no, I... So, yeah, I'm okay with it. Plus, he's loyal. I mean, you can't... He's loyal to the cause, whatever the, you know, what he believes in. So,
excuse me. Anyway, after pleasantries are exchanged, John and Davos are asked to surrender their arms, which they do, and they watch as their boat is being taken away from them. Which, you know, that's the kind of the first worry of like, oh my god, like, can we get it back? And you don't, you know, and you later find out they don't.
No, taking our weapons and our boat.
And our boat, and
it's the fastest boat in all.
Yeah.
Well, it did the 12 parsecs, and or did the Kessel Run under 12 parsecs.
12 parsecs. Yeah. but another odd exchange too, because like Davos tries to talk to Missandei, and he's like, you know, let me place your accent, and you're not sure like what he's trying to do, just be pleasant or what, but she just kind of gives him the brush off, and then he goes, this place has changed, but it's like. In what way has it changed? It wasn't really warm when he was there with earlier. You know, it was like when Melisandre was leeching the other kid and everything else. It's like, what? I don't know. I just didn't get the point of him saying this place has changed. But I just found it confusing.
He's just making conversation.
I guess. But as they walk, you have a bit more of a pleasant conversation as Tyrion starts inquiring about Sansa, you know, saying like she's much smarter than she lets on, and John kind of wittingly going, she's starting to let on. So I mean, I thought that was a great line.
I thought it was a funny line, and it's true.
Yeah, because she's becoming her a good, confident leader now, and we see this later in the episode. And then, you know, also, which was, I thought was another really good line, was that they both kind of inquired about how they came to their positions. You know, it's like, how did you become Hand of the Queen, and how did you become King of the North? Because they've been so long since they've seen each other. But of course, they're like, we can say that for another time.
It is funny. I mean, especially from Tyrion's perspective. You know, he wouldn't expect you to turn against your own family, et cetera, et cetera.
And isn't that where he said that he said you've gained some scars or something like that, some battle wounds?
Yeah, right. That was, when they're meeting on the beach. He's
so
like,
to me, I think it's a mutual respect for each other.
Mm.
They're both underdogs, and they're still survive. There's of all the people who've been killed, they're still hanging around, and they have power. So anyway, that's why I look at it.
But John says he was advised not to come down here. His people think he's a fool for coming down here. And Tyrion absolutely agrees. He says, I would have advised against it as well. He goes, the Stark men don't fare well when they travel south, which is historically correct. And but the thing that was also really another kind of beat over the head is that Jon immediately goes, I'm not a Stark. And then the dragon, top guns him, buzzes the tower right over his head, like lays it on thick.
Negative Ghost Rider, the pattern is full. I thought that was a cool scene.
It was. I mean, it made me jump because you're not expecting it at all.
No, I thought, even though it's CGI and it's not real, right? Those aren't real dragons. But I thought that was a cool scene. I really enjoyed it.
Because they still, even this far in, they kind of capture the spectacle of the dragons, you know, the
right.
How awe-inspiring it probably is for somebody that's never seen one before. I've never seen a dragon,
and you can see with Davos and Jon Snow, they're looking at it like, my god, that is so cool.
Yeah. I thought the colors were a bit weird though, because like usually you can tell like which one's which, because there's a solid black one, a green one, and a white one with little gold specks. And this one, I was like, oh, they all kind of looked the same when they were flying. But that may have just been a CGI call. I don't know if you guys paid for me.
I didn't notice it so much.
Not till you just brought it
up. I ducked behind the couch, so
you ducked.
I didn't get a good look.
But now that you brought it up, I now noticed it, and I hate the episode.
Okay. But as they're continuing to walk up the long and winding path to the castle,
can I stop you here real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Is that just CGI or is that a real bridge somewhere?
Oh, that's got to be CGI.
Really? Because it looks so real.
Oh yeah. I mean, that was well spent CGI money. It had to be.
Honestly, there's so many castles United Kingdom. I'm sure there's something there that'll be close.
Well, they film in Greenland or Iceland? Where do they film?
Well, they film in Ireland for the majority of it. And then I know, like, the Beyond the Wall stuff, all the really north stuff, is usually filmed in Iceland.
Because I kept looking. I go, God, that looks real.
But then again, the two castles towards the end were a huge letdown. Whereas that one looks so real and so big,
I'm probably thinking the castle's probably not real, but the bridge it looks so real, like off the beach. Wouldn't it be a cool place to stay?
Make your own Airbnb for one like that, Jeff.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. $135 a night, not bad.
Yeah, more like $2,000 a night. I thought you were going to say at the Downton Abbey, castle.
Well, that's a goal of my wife, so maybe someday. Mm-hmm. And we'll have terrible food, but we'll enjoy it anyway.
Some crumpets. So as they're walking up the path, you see Melisandre watching them from up top, and Varys comes to join her, and he's really curious. He's like, you got them here. Why aren't you down there to greet them? And she kind of... is like, whereas in the last episode, she was really confident of you have to bring these two together. She kind of returned to her timid self, I felt. And she's like, I've done my part. I've brought ice and fire together. And then she goes, my time is done whispering in the ears of kings. And he asks why, what will you do now though? And she goes, I'm leaving. I've made mistakes in the past. And, Varys actually thinks this is a good idea because he thinks that her life is in danger if she stays, which is not really made clear. I wonder if it was just a power struggle for him. Like, I don't want anyone advising the queen.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Okay. But she says that
she does have a bad track record.
Exactly.
Aside from saving Jon Snow.
Right.
Which she said she doesn't have that power, so it's more kind of like the other guy, saying, I just pray and then they come back to life.
If they choose it.
I thought this was a good scene between the two.
It was.
Definitely a game of chess between the two.
But what's interesting, because she says she's not from Volantis. She's from Asai, which is more east of Volantis, but she says she's going to go to Volantis, and I'm wondering if she's going to meet up with other red priests or priestess and then come back like she said she's going to do, which I don't know for what end, for what means and ends, but it's just interesting because when he's saying yeah, you should go, she's like, no, I'll come back because I have to die in this strange country, and then he starts to kind of, and then she goes, the same as you. Which that to me is,
he did have that look like, well, that's not cool.
Yeah, well, no, but think about the last Red Priestess he saw that was in Marine. She told him what did the flame say to you? Should I tell you what the flame said to you when they burnt your genitals? And he's like, how do you know that? And so it's almost as if, even Melisandre is telling him we know all about you. And it's wondering what was told him? Is he one of them too? Did he die and then was brought back to life? It's just one of those weird things. So I'm really curious now how they're going to tie up Varys and Melisandre's story arcs.
Well, not about the first. Why does the Lord of Light, if this is a god that exists within this universe, care about Varys so much?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because they're all like she said, we're all his instruments, and he has a purpose for us. And so that's, so it makes me go back to that, Gandalf the Grey, Gandalf the White kind of thing. It's like, he keeps you alive until you've served your purpose.
Right.
And I'm curious if Varys has died and has been brought back to life. He just doesn't know it. I don't know.
It was a great scene. And it, like you said, does bring up some questions.
Mm-hmm. But then they stop talking and they look out and you see the lone Greyjoy ship coming in bearing the bad news of their defeat.
Yeah, well, they said there's a couple, but the shot only had like one kind of pathetic half surviving ship coming in that Varys saw.
Right.
Womp womp a bomb.
So John finally reaches the throne room and you see Dany sitting on her this other throne. And then
not the throne she wants.
Not the throne she wants, but you know, it's the original throne of
right.
of the Targaryens. And Missandei, I love this little bit too. It's so great because Missandei is reading out all these lists of Dany's titles, I guess to make her seem more, you know, authentic. You know, yes. Like she's, you know, and then after she's done, John just kind of looks over at Davos like, okay, now your turn. and then Davos like, this is Jon Snow.
Pause. The bastard.
But he's the king in the north. And I just loved it because it was just two totally different kinds of people of just like, you know, here's me and this is all this. And then whatever. I don't care.
But that's why I respect Jon Snow more.
Yeah.
It's not about the titles. It's not about what you've done. He's there to serve a purpose, to defeat the White Walkers, to keep peace, to help his people survive. Whereas Dany, I think she does care about her people. I'm not saying that. But she's got more of this, I'm the queen. I'm the rightful heir. It's mine. I went through this. She seems to be more selfish than she used to be.
Yeah.
That's just the way I got through the episode going, God, she's just not the same person she used
to be.
I also
see, though, why she's trying to kind of make a statement and say, because this is like people on this land that she has not ever had to, like, you know, present herself as a queen before. So she has to kind of, I know it does seem a bit over the top and a bit like she hasn't earned it, but she also has to kind of like play the part so that people don't take advantage of her, I guess would be my thoughts.
She has three dragons.
I know.
And she might be listening to the Queen of Thorns too, in that she said, you know, people only follow you if they fear you. And she might have been trying to test that theory with John of like, I'll make you fear me, you know. Because I agree with Jack in that, yeah, she's shown arrogance in some previous episodes and previous seasons, but this was the first episode where I was kind of like, man, Dany, you're really laying it on thick here with just being stubborn and prideful.
But she has to set the expectations now because this is John is saying he's king of the North, which is challenging her claim to the Seven Kingdoms, right? So I think I see why she has to kind of they both have to, you know, put their foot down.
But I think if she knew Jon Snow more, he probably doesn't want to be.
But she doesn't know that. She just knows.
I know. I'm just saying that she needs. I just didn't like her attitude going into it. I understand why she did it, but I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because nothing got accomplished.
No, exactly. I mean, they were just both too stubborn, seeing things they wanted to see it.
It's almost like they're related.
It's moonlighting. Sorry for all the youngins that don't get that reference. But yeah, so she refers to him as Lord, and then Davos challenges her, you know, saying like he's actually king. And so then they kind of get back spinning back and forth about, you know, who is the rightful king and you're in rebellion and all this. And John refuses. She says, are you here to bend the knee? And he says, no, not because why should I? You burned my family last time. Yeah. To which Dany does do a good thing. She kind of course corrects and says, you know, asks for forgiveness on behalf of her family. But then John kind of throws that back in her face too, saying like, you know, because she's like, you know, I shouldn't be held responsible for the sins of my father. And he's like, then I shouldn't be held to the bounds, you know, the oath sworn by my ancestors.
Which is 100% true.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, it's a good back and forth, which I really liked.
It was a great. It was a fantastic scene. I enjoyed it.
And then Dany then does does kind of appeal reasonably a little bit, as in, like, you know, our houses are meant to be together. You know, we've always had, you know, centuries of peace under the Targaryens. All you have to do is just, you know, swear to me and you'll be warden of the North. So basically the same position, he won't be king. It'll be like it's always been.
And on a side note, we've been bashing Khaleesi a little bit here. He could have done the same. Thank you. Yeah, let me just do it. To get what I want, let me just do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I think they both played it exactly how they had to play it.
Yeah.
That's just my thought. I don't bash either side on this situation.
Well, I'm just saying he knows that there's a huge threat coming.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to win the battle, you know, for the throne. You got to compromise in there somewhere. Somewhere you got to check your ego at the door and say, okay, if I really want to save my people, Jon Snow could have bowed. All right, here, whatever.
But then he has to go back and say, all right, I'm now the warden of the North.
I had my fingers
basically
crossed.
Basically the same thing.
My fingers were crossed behind there. Is it the same pay? I mean, it's King of the North and Lord of the North. Do you get the same thing?
Well, you know, yeah.
What are the benefits? I mean,
I got nothing. But then, you know, John kind of goes, look, and Danny actually is like, so why are you here then if you're not going to swear loyalty to me? He says, because I'm here because we need each other. And Danny once again shows that, like, she kind of balks at, like, I have dragons, I have an army, I need your help, you know? Mm-hmm. And then John,
that would have ticked me off.
Yeah, that one really, yeah. But John first kind of does appeal and give her a compliment. He goes, well, I know you're a better person than Cersei because you haven't invaded King's Landing yet, which would be the quickest way to defeat your enemy. So you're not here to kill a lot of people, which she, you know, so Danny does smile at that she actually, he acknowledges that she's being smart about it. But then he goes, but all this war, all this stuff down here is just child's play, to which Danny, of course, gets even more insulted because you called me a child.
Well, you're acting like one.
Yeah. But he comes over the top, says, I'm not your enemy. The dead are the enemy. And this is, I really liked, even though, you know, Danny is annoying me at this point, this was such great facial and voice acting by Emilia Clarke, because she just kind of gives this straight eyebrow look of just, the dead. Like, are you serious? You coming at me with the dead?
Yeah.
And from someone who's not from Westeros, who probably doesn't know anything about the lore of the White Walkers, it would sound insane to anybody.
Right.
And then, of course, Tyrion does a good job of keeping her on keel. But then Jon finally explains what the Night King is a little bit and the Army of the Dead. But Dany just dismisses him as nonsense. And then this is another thing that kind of annoyed me with her. Because instead of listening or more inquiring about it, at least kind of humoring a bit, like, what is this? She dismisses it and proceeds to explain her story very selfishly as like, they tried to murder me when I was a baby. You know, they raped me. I was sold as stock. You know, the only thing that kept me alive was that I had faith in myself. You know, I don't put stock in these myths and legends as what she's dismissing John's tale as.
Right.
And then John comes back right over the top again. Just, you know, you'll be ruling over a graveyard if we don't defeat the Night's King. Which I thought was just a good, like, shut up.
Again, the whole scene was excellent. I mean, it was something everybody had wanted to, you know, everyone Game of Thrones fan wanted to see. And I thought it played out really well.
Yeah.
Even though Danny should have listened a little more, but, you know.
Yeah. But anyway, so they don't agree. And Varys comes shooting in. Now that he's talked to the ship's captain and whispers in Danny's ear, she dismisses everything. I mean, as dismisses John and Davos as they can leave. And what's interesting to me, though, also a little tidbit was that, because you see it turn on its head later, she looks at one of her Dothraki soldiers and tells him something to do with Davos and Jon Snow. You assume it's just like, oh, get them food and find them a room. But it's looking at Tyrion's face, and he's understanding what Danny's saying.
Right.
And that's what I thought was interesting, is that he's been with her long enough now, he's understanding Dothraki, which he never did before. And so he's picking it up. what she's like when she thinks he doesn't understand her. And then John comes back and says, you know, am I your prisoner? And she just kind of looks and says, not yet.
Oh, man. Poor John.
Poor John.
Well, you know, we're bashing it, but I would have said lazy writing if it would have all worked out right away.
Yeah, again, it's...
But I'm here to criticize, so that's what, you know, I can do that.
Well, that's what I kind of thought about my theory not panning out about Jorah, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I can get to that when we get to it. But, you know, same thing. It's like, you know, you have a guy have grayscale for two whole seasons, and then he's cured in one episode. You're like, well, shouldn't this have backfired at least once, you know, to make it look, you know, come on, you got to stretch it out.
We don't have enough
bit.
Time, Nick. We only have, what, 12 episodes left in the entire series?
I mean, lazy writing. Could have put in a couple more episodes in there.
Oh, man. Anyways.
Okay. So
Sam had a really sharp knife.
He sure did. Got like putting that oil on there, and it just cleared it right up. Some good lotion.
Well, just rub that Tussin in there. Just rub it.
So then we cut to a very brief scene with Theon, where he's being pulled aboard ship of another Greyjoy ship, and the crew asks him, you know, is Yara dead? And he says, no, Euron took her prisoner, and I tried to save her, to which they immediately call him out on his BS and said, no, you wouldn't be here if you'd have tried. Which is another cut straight to Theon.
Now, like, anyone have sympathy there for Theon? I felt bad for him.
No, what does there feel bad
no,
about?
No.
He's got to own up to the fact that he chickened out.
But why did he chicken out? What had he gone through for? I mean, if this had been a current episode, we'd seen it in one episode. It went on for like 10 episodes, the torture he went through.
Mm-hmm.
So we know what he's gone through. I mean, he's a shell of himself. I mean, I'm sorry. I got to feel bad for him. What could he have done at that point? Could he have saved his sister at that point?
No, he would have been a dead man. Yeah.
Right. So he took the, you know, I'll save her later approach.
I mean, because that's what it was. Like I said last week, you know, just seeing all the death around him and then them cutting out tongues triggered all of that back again. Of like, oh my God, if I'm taken prisoner, I'm going to have my one more thing of me cut off. And right. I'm
running out of things.
Yeah, that he is.
So Jay, you're on the side. You're against it.
What? I'm not against him. I'm just saying, like, you know, I don't have much sympathy for him. But I get why he did it. Like, I'm not here saying I don't even understand what. No, I get it. I'm just saying I'm not gonna feel sorry for him.
All right. Okay. That's your title. Your opinion.
But then it cuts to King's Landing, and you see Euron Greyjoy riding into town with his prisoners behind him, and people are shouting, you know, praising him as the hero that defeated, you know, the Armada and all this, and he's just, you know, loving it. He's like, yeah. Oh, this is the life. I can get used to it, you know.
I think I saw on Entertainment Weekly, and it's been other places as well, that he looks a lot like Joshua Jackson, a.k.a. Pacey.
He does.
He does. He does look like Joshua Jackson.
And I was just like, God, he did. Now I can't unsee it. That's all I see is Pacey when he's going down the streets.
with a beard.
With a beard.
My question, are the people eating better now that Cersei's in charge?
They seem to have enough food to throw around.
Because they have plenty of food to throw at people. I mean, I remember before they were starving.
Maybe they passed out the food. You know, just in preparation.
Here you go, peasants. Here's some food.
Maybe it's the rotten food. Yeah, maybe this is the food they had to throw away.
I don't know. Some of that lettuce looked pretty crisp. I don't know.
That was the, you know, actors' union laws. You can't throw rotten lettuce at people, actors. You know, you have to have fresh lettuce.
That's probably what it is. But I always wondered, why do people throw food?
It's like, what was it, Batman 2? When the Penguin's giving his speech and start throwing tomatoes at him, he's like, yes. Why is there always one guy that has to bring food? But then you see the opposite. Like, it's actually, it would have been an interesting character study because you see it from his point of view, just basking in this glory, And then you have the three women behind him. You know, you have the Greyjoy girl, Yara, being prideful, unbent, just, you know, like walking there. Like, and then the other two, which are just ducking for their lives as stuff's being chucked at them.
Yeah.
Of just different ways to feel that scene.
Yeah, another great scene.
Yeah. So as they're brought into the throne room, he dismounts and he presents them, you know, the justice, the murderers of your daughter. And Alara Sands spits at the feet of Cersei to actually what Cersei actually liked, I think. You know, she just kind of like, yeah, there you go. Like, just being a prideful. Because I think she kind of admired that. It's like, you know, she's just like hers. And like,
right.
Yeah, don't show your weakness ever. Cersei's happy. She tells Euron that he's proven himself. And then now that the war is done, he'll get what he desires, which is that he'll get to marry her. Of course, yeah, he think he was disappointed because he thought he could marry her then versus end of the war. Because at the end of the war, anything could happen. He could be dead.
I gotta wait?
Yeah.
I think he's killed off before.
Oh, absolutely. Him. Yeah. Even probably by Jaime.
I was going to say Jaime, too.
Yeah. But Cersei, though, says, you know, claims Euron as in the head of the Navy, and Jaime is the, you know, the commander of the armies, and together they're going to go defeat Daenerys' armies, or their enemies, opposing forces is actually what she says. The people cheer, and then Euron, of course, has to just give it to Jaime, you know, and he's like, so, tell me, you know, brother to brother, how does she like it? Rough? Soft? And then Jaime starts to get insulted, and he goes, we'll talk later. You know, it's like, enough to give him
a finger in the bum. A finger in the bum.
Finger in the bum. Yeah. I forgot about that. Pacey, how dare you?
Jamie's like going, but I only have so many fingers.
Exactly. She likes the gold hand now.
Nice foam and cold. Okay.
Let's move on.
Yeah, we're getting married.
Yeah. Hey, it was in the episode.
Oh, sure. I know.
So the next thing we have Cersei going to visit Alaria and I never say her name right, but Tyene, Sam's the daughter, and then the Mountain are in the cell. And Cersei begins to sympathize a little bit, saying like, you know, I understand why you are the way you are at the death of your lover. You know, like, yeah, you know, I never heard a scream like that. That's what I knew was true love. And he goes, and you probably would have gotten away with it if only he hadn't taunted the Mountain. And cause that was his weakness. I mean, the Mountain killed him for it.
He wanted to drag it out. But can I ask a question? Has the Mountain gotten bigger?
I think so. I was a different actor, I think, now.
Dude's huge.
Yeah.
He has like stilts in his shoes. He's kind of cheating, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway. But, you know, she does kind of questions like, why did you kill my daughter? You know, it's like, what good did it do? You know, I mean, but.
Which is true. He didn't need to kill her. Like, it was all purely revenge.
Well, it was revenge.
It was revenge.
But her daughter didn't have anything to do with it.
No, exactly. Because, I mean,
but she's like
sweet.
The most innocent of Lannisters out of all the Lannisters.
But she wanted to hit the Lannisters where it hurt, and killing her daughter was, I mean, in the end, was it a mistake? Yes. By the time she wasn't acting rational anyway, so.
Yeah. But Cersei then describes the ways that she's dreamt of killing her and all the poetic justice. And then you finally, which it even threw me up. I didn't expect it to happen until it actually happened. And I even love the facial acting by Alara Sand, the mom, of like when they realize what Cersei does. You know, she just pulls down the gag and kisses the daughter on the lips. And so she's going to kill her the same way she killed her daughter.
Right.
And it was just such poetic justice. And then the fact that, you know, she was like, Mama, like, oh, no.
and they try to reach for each other. And they can't reach each other. And she's going to watch her die. And then, it's really going to put a hurting on her. So.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's actually kind of a book segment. But I can go ahead and say it because it doesn't really matter. But, like, it's actually it kind of almost harkens back to the way Brandon Stark, not Bran Stark, but his grandfather or his uncle, and Rickard died underneath the Mad King. Is that they were facing each other? Well, One was hung, not about his neck as in like hung, but he was strapped up in the ceiling in a suit of armor and set on fire, while the other one had a noose around his neck just out of reach of a sword to cut down while he was burning. And so one got burned alive and the other one hung himself trying to grab the sword. Wow. So they both, and that's, it's kind of the same way as in like they were trying to save each other, but couldn't. And it's kind of the same way for that, which is like, oh wow, that's so just awful. But it's even worse than the fact that, you know, she said that you're going to watch her rot as right. she dies and then down to nothing. I was like, cause I can't, that would be even worse.
And we're going to feed you and keep you alive.
Yeah. Yeah, but so you see the kind of the nothing.
So is that worse? Is that worse? That versus the mountain smashing her head in? I think the mountain smashing the head in would have been worse.
Well, I think it would have felt worse, but at least it's over quick.
It's over quick. I mean, you before you feel. I mean, eventually the shock.
But again, like the poison, like you don't you die fair. I mean, it's no, but fairly quick.
Well, as far as dying, but the mother having to watch her child die and then just watch her rot away.
Well, yeah. You could have smashed her head in and still had her rot away.
Yeah, but I mean, think about watching your child's rotting corpse in front of you for no telling how long she'll be in there.
She said, she goes, she could die in an hour, 24 a day, 2 days. She doesn't know. So the longer she has to, you know, wait. And what if she didn't give her a poison? What if she's just, which is just tormenting her and just dragging? I mean, it could be possible that, you know, she got the right potion. Who knows? I'm thinking maybe she didn't put poison on. You know, there wasn't the same poison. Maybe just to mess with their heads.
Man, that's sick.
Well, if I was a sick person, that's what I would do.
Mm-hmm. So you and Ramsay Bolton fit right in.
Oh, yep. Best friends. BFFs. <Yeah.
laughs> So the next thing we see is Jamie upstairs while Cersei's been downstairs playing. I guess that turned her on because she comes come rushing in to make love to Jamie. I mean, you were seeing kind of like, not that Cersei's ever been sane, but we're seeing like Cersei really become just off the hinge, kind of crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think we said before, she has nothing to lose. She's lost everything.
Yeah, it's true. And you see it like we're here in this scene too, and the fact that the next morning, they wake up, and there's a knock at the door, and Cersei gets up to go answer it naked, and Jamie's like, no, don't get it, because we can't be seen together. And Cersei's like, it doesn't matter now. I'm the queen of the Seven Kingdoms. I can do as I please. And Jamie kind of, I think he had mixed reactions to that, of like relief, and then kind of like dread of like,
right,
the secret's going to be out now.
Now we had
not that it wasn't ever really a secret.
We had a theory on our Facebook page by Michael David. He thought that this could be Arya.
Yeah, I mean, I
personally thought it was a great theory. Yeah. I said that's a fact. And
eventually Michael David, Arya plays her. It did seem like the way that character looked at them, and it's just like I feel right. Something's gonna happen with that. I would feel, or it would make sense.
I mean, it's a perfectly. It's a great theory, and I mean, if Arya ever decides to go like south, that's definitely the way I think she'll do it. It makes total sense, and that you have someone that could easily penetrate inside the Red Keep and get to Cersei and Jaime if they wanted to.
Right. No, I just thought I didn't even think about that. Great theory. Whether it's true or not, I just at least it's a good theory.
It's a great theory. Yeah, I don't know if Michael thought of it though. I don't want to give him that credit. No.
He probably stole it from a message board somewhere else and claimed it as his own.
But the messenger tells her that there's a visitor from Braavos arrived, and Cersei starts to get ready, and she meets the man from the Iron Bank who appreciates what she's done to.
Played by Mark Gatiss, if there's any Sherlock fans out there.
Yeah, so I know I couldn't see past Minecraft. Yeah. I was like, what? that, you know, she's restored some order. But she's like, you know, you're here to make sure your debts are collected, which is true. But and so he makes it known to her that, you know, the debt that the kingdom is under is considerable, and that now she's entering a new war, and it's unlikely that she can pay back the debt. So Cersei then inquires, like, well, who will you back for this? And he kind of, they kind of play back and forth, and it's like, you know, we don't bet, we don't do this, you know, we just make investments. And so Cersei makes a case saying, you know, I've already won all these victories against Dany, and that when's the last time a conqueror ever paid their debts? When's the last time free slaves paid their debt, or a Dothraki? And so the Iron Bank kind of, it's, you know, you're just like your father, in that she's logical in that point of view.
Right.
And then she goes, give me a fortnight, stay here in King's Landing, and you will return to Braavos, and the debt will be paid in full. Which, that's a very bold claim. So I'm curious. I have an idea what Cersei's going to do, and I'll get into that in theory section. But I don't know. It's a, I don't see Cersei really pulling it off.
Well, I thought she does at the end of the episode. So
yeah, that's what I thought. Spoiler. I thought she did.
What, the paid it off?
Well, because she
had a lot of gold.
She got the she got all that gold at the end of the episode.
Oh, did she get? Oh, I didn't see that. I guess.
Yeah.
Where was the gold inside of?
Not Casterly Rock, but.
Yeah. Oh, in Highgarden.
Yeah, Highgarden. Yeah.
Okay, I guess I missed that. That's
where they went to. That's why they attacked it.
Right, because that's where most of the money was. Right. Okay, I guess I just missed that little clip there.
They show kind of after they've already taken it over, before they go to the last scene, them kind of packing up all the gold bars and stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Anything gold, like, you know, candle holders and stuff like that.
Well, there goes my theory.
Sorry.
Oh, well.
It happens.
Yeah.
You can take one of Michael David's.
Yeah. Okay, so next thing we see Tyrion walking along the edges of the cliff in Dragonstone, and he's approaching a brooding Jon Snow, because that's what Jon Snow's good at. as the two look over the water, you know, Tyrion Tyrion's wanting to brood himself over not anticipating the Greyjoy attack, and Jon's brooding over being a prisoner, you know, which he goes, you took my ship! and then he goes, why can't you people realize, you know, the dead are coming for us all? And it's kind of like we're getting to what we said earlier, like, you know, Tyrion does say he does believe him now, because he trusts the eyes of an honest man. But, you know, you have to see it from Danny's point of view, in that, you know, why should we attack this if we don't?
Right.
We haven't seen it, and she doesn't know.
It could be a trap.
It could be a trap. Yeah.
She takes her forces to go to the north, and then Cersei comes marching in. So yeah, she has there. She I have no problem with her not trusting Jon Snow there.
Right. But Tyrion does well what Tyrion does. He appeals to Jon's where he can't get, like, where he's like Eddard. You know, he's on one point and he's fixated on that, and he's not thinking of other things that can bring them together. And so Tyrion does that for him. He says, can you ask for something else, something that's reasonable? And, you know, that's where Jon, they don't say on screen, but, you know, he goes back to his priority mission is to get the dragon glass. And so it cuts to Tyrion explaining to Dany about the dragon glass. You know, it's worthless, but supposedly it kills the enemies in the north. So let Jon mine for it. You'd lose nothing, and maybe you will gain his trust. Dany still doesn't believe it. And then this is the flip, as I was saying earlier, which was great. Dany's like, I don't believe it. It's just insane, kind of. And Tyrion tries to pass off his own wisdom as wisdom of the past. And he says, you know, a wise man says, never believe a thing because you want to believe it. And whereas he understood her talking in Dothraki, she has now learned to read him as well when he's full of it. And she goes, oh, are you trying to pass on your own words is ancient wisdom? And he just kind of, no, I'd never do that. Because he'd done that, you know, previously to Grey Worm and Missandei.
Right.
And yeah. So it's I love that, in the fact that you're seeing characters getting comfortable with each other. And then it cuts to the outside, and Jon is watching the dragons and spots Dany down below. and walks down, and she explains why she named the dragons. You know, Drogon is named after her husband, Drogo of Viserys, and then Rhaegar, which are her two brothers. They both talk about the losses of their brother, and Jon actually says that he's lost two brothers, which I thought was a bit weird because I couldn't quite remember in the show or not if Jon actually knows Bran is alive or not, because he should have said, I've lost three brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is just like a technical thing, because I was like, well, how does he know he's only lost two? I thought he thought Bran and Rickon were dead. But who knows? It's just a little thing I picked up on. But and then he said, and then he asked, "Have you been talking to Tyrion?" And he's, and she says, "Well,
he is my hand.
He's my hand, and he enjoys what he's good at." And another, a really good kind of thing is that Jon says that he does not enjoy what he's good at, which is kind of another hint in that he is not a Stark. You know, that he might be Rhaegar's son. Because if you remember, Ser Barristan told, I'm not sure if it was last season or the season before, told Dany that Rhaegar hated fighting. He hated doing what he had to do, too. He didn't like leading. All he wanted to do was play the harp and sing. And so it's kind of like he's echoing that of, like, you know, he's his father's kid and that he doesn't like to lead. He doesn't like to kill. But
I think staying true to his character.
Yeah, that, too. I just thought it was another
look. That's a really good call.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of them in there. You know, they're trying to subtly show people stuff. And then this is where it kind of goes back in that they still both refuse. They both agree that Cersei shouldn't stay on the Iron Throne, but they don't budge past that other than, you know, they neither want to recognize each other's authority to rule.
Agree to disagree.
Yeah. But then Dany kind of, to bring it back, she said, okay, I'm going to allow you to mine for the dragon glass, and I'll even provide the manpower, which is nice.
Right.
But then Jon kind of like, oh, so you believe me? And then she goes, well, you better get to work. So she still doesn't believe him, but she's just going by what Tyrion said and, like, you know, throw a dog a bone.
Couldn't she send a raven to someone that's maybe has seen somewhere, that's seen one of them, and Raven comes back with an answer, yes, he's telling the truth, or something like that?
Well, that's what, like, I kind of thought that, too. Is like, you know, she was all, well, actually, no, not yet. But, like, later on, she's totally willing to go fly one of her dragons to go destroy the Greyjoy Navy. Why couldn't she just fly one of her dragons up north to see some White Walkers, or at least talk to some other people who have seen them?
Right.
It's like, if you want to see, come see, you know, come on, Danny, you know, like, let's go. Up to the north. Just get on the dragon. Let's go. You know, you took my ship. Let's go.
No, I'm sure Jon's always wanted to fly on a dragon.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that, like, could he? I mean, if he, because, like, supposedly you can't fly on a dragon unless you have some kind of Targaryen blood in you, because the skin gets so hot you'll burn.
Oh.
And that's why that she can fly him, is because she's the unburnt. Whereas in John has been shown he can be burned, because he was burned in season 1 or 2.
Yeah, he was burned, yeah.
But it could be like a retconned thing where it's like, well, we didn't really know back then.
Because
was it in the book that he was burned?
Yes.
It was in the book as well? Okay, never mind.
Yeah, but that also, but you have to think of that book was written, starting to be written in like 1991.
But it's different if you're sitting on a dragon, though.
Yes, true. And then even George R. R. Martin has admitted that there's things that he's written in the earlier books that he wished he could change now, like little facts that people are like, oh, you can't do that because it's this.
Right.
So that could be one of those things that he regrets.
True.
So back to Winterfell now, and Sansa is overlooking the food stock, and she's with Littlefinger and some of the advisors. And they inform her that there's only enough food for 1,000 people for about 1 year. So she's wanting to plan ahead and talking about at least all to Winterfell, so when people start fleeing or start centralizing in Winterfell, they'll be prepared.
I thought it was a great plan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just showing, and then, like, it's like the next thing, too. They're showing Sansa is becoming a leader and trying to think. futuristically, because you know because they're seeing armorers from the Vale making breastplates, and they're just making them the way they would in the Vale, with just straight metal. But then she's thinking, well, shouldn't there be leather inside of those? Because if it gets really cold, the metal's going to stick to you. And then, of course, Lord Aaron's like, absolutely, and then orders them to start doing that.
Any chance that Sansa overthrows Snow?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think that.
You don't think so? Got a little finger in there.
I think Snow dies, and then Sansa is the one that kind of takes up the mantle.
Well, why are we killing Snow again? What's up with that?
He finally gets to rest.
Yeah.
I think I can see her, because Littlefinger's in her ear, and she is showing that she can lead. I mean, she is showing that she has the she has the brains to do it, so I can see some friction there.
But we also
think that Littlefinger does know John's true identity too. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm curious, you know, if Littlefinger makes it out this season or not, because now that Bran is there and Bran knows all, does he know what Littlefinger has planned?
But Bran doesn't seem to be talking too much. I mean, you know, yeah. minute start talking sense. I got to go. I haven't seen you in like 10 years, but you know, we'll catch up.
You're freaking me out, kid.
Stick with the face tree. We're okay. I gotta move over here.
But yeah, Littlefinger gives her comments. His command suits you, and he's trying to convince her to. Which another like weird Littlefinger scene that doesn't really make sense. But he's trying to get her to see the enemy of all sides, you know, and always be thinking of potentials from other people, which I guess he even means himself too, which maybe she's learning that. But you know, fight every battle everywhere in your mind.
Right.
It's good advice, but it's also kind of smells of desperation from Littlefinger that he's kind of losing influence.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't really have influence.
And then a soldier tells Sansa that someone is at the gate. She walks out and sees that it's Bran, and it's another one of those really weird, creepy scenes. Where it's like it's another thing where I thought like Danny kind of got a little too serious too soon. Same with Bran, like because last season we saw him.
Yeah, it's like I haven't seen him forever. Let's go straight to me actually seeing you get raped. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
that's a great time. Thanks, Bran.
Who thought it was going to be Arya? Anybody?
I think everybody thought it was Arya, but like, yeah, it was.
It could have gone either way. Yeah, but, it was a fairly awkward reunion.
It was. Yeah. I mean, it's just
I mean, just think about like. I mean, I don't as the three-eyed raven. This is what I just thought was weird, because like you had him last season not knowing anything really. I mean, he's learning how to do it, you know, and he even tells the three-eyed raven as the raven, "I don't know enough." And he's like, "Well, you know, too bad." And we see him one scene where he's at the gate and he freaks out Ed at the gate, telling him like where all he had been, and then now he's just like, "I'm the three-eyed raven. I know everything." And you're like, "Well, you learned quick, didn't you?"
Could he be the one that spills the beans about Jon Snow's?
I have no doubt.
True identity.
I have no doubt. This is what I was about to say, is that because you see that after they hug, and the next thing you see is at the tree, and right. Sansa goes, "I wish Jon were here," and then he goes, "Yes, I need to speak to him," and yeah. Like every book reader out there went, "It's happening!" You know, Bran knows. So. He knows the truth. So, I mean, who knows how many people will take Bran seriously. But then also, that's the other neat thing that was brought out earlier in that scene when Sansa said, what's the longest recorded winter in history, or last 100 years?
Yep.
And the new maester says, "I'll have to check, because your old maester used to kept a copy of every single Raven scroll." And so who's to say that someone might have sent something, you know, a while back that's been recorded that will actually kind of shed a little light on this. Mm. I mean, it's just a good theory. Yeah, but like
it is good. Know.
But, you know, Bran, though, she's trying to explain what the three. Oh, because like Sansa realizes that Bran is now the Lord of Winterfell because he is the male heir. But he refuses. So now I'm a three-eyed raven, and he's trying to explain to her what this means.
Can't do the job, man. Can't do it.
Yeah. But yeah, then he freaks her out, of course, by telling her how pretty she was at her wedding, and he was sorry for everything that happened to her, and she kind of like, okay, now I've got to go.
Yeah, that's just not. He could have left. Cool, he could have left that out.
Yeah. And then on to the Citadel, and we see Sam and the Archmaester examining Jorah. And all the, and to, you know, to my amazement, all the grayscale was gone, and they cleared him and said that the infection was no longer. Which, I mean, yay for
Jorah. Yeah, didn't even expect it to be done that quickly. I mean, I get we're an accelerated pace. We talked a little about it earlier, but it definitely... well, I was like, dang, that was easy, I guess.
It had to be done quickly because he was supposed to leave the next day.
The next day. That's what, yeah. I mean, like, you're peeling off my skin like an onion. I have pus everywhere, and the next day I'm just good. You know? It was the air. The air cured me. Thank you.
This is dry air.
Yeah.
The dry air, Lady Betty.
Yeah. But, you know, to Jorah's credit, though, that's who say he was saying all that so Sam wouldn't get in trouble, but, you know, he isn't fooling anybody.
Yeah.
He asks him what he's going to do, and he says he's going to go meet up with Khaleesi again.
She's going to really find me hot now.
Yeah. But it was nice because, you know, Sam had enough faith that he actually touched him, and Jorah hasn't touched anyone in, what, 2 seasons?
Yeah. When he shook his good hand, and then when he put his other, like, when he was putting his other hand, I was like, do you have to do that? I'm good with just
I was thinking the same thing. Handshake hand would have done. Dude, man, you're pushing your luck. Maybe I missed a piece.
Really? Yeah. Just in case. Do we need to go this far?
But who's to say, like, what if Sam does get, like, a little hint of grayscale, you know, and then he has to figure out another cure or something? I don't know. It's probably not going to happen, but.
No, he'd have to just chop off his hand, right?
Well, kudos to your original theory, Nick, that Sam was the one that was going to save him.
Yeah, it just made sense. So Sam does go down to the Archmaester's quarters, and, you know, he does get in trouble, but he does give him praise, saying, you know, I forbade you from doing it because it's rarely successful, but you did it. And how did you do it? And then Sam's like, I read the book and I followed the instructions. And so I'm like, okay. Like, I found that really interesting answer. And that, so that means people weren't reading the instructions?
Well, they could have been reading instructions, but they might've been afraid to try it.
Well, it's also like, there's skill in it, right? Like there's a lot of people you can just like people that you can read instructions on how to play guitar, or read instructions on how to cook something, or read instructions on how to play a sport. But there's people that are, you know, better at it than others. So I think that is a simple answer that he can give. But there's he obviously has a talent for it.
Yeah. Okay. And I thought, you know, like, because usually when you master something, you get a link, you know, a chain link. And I thought, oh man, like, we're going to see Sam get his first chain link, you know, which would be cool, but instead it's like, womp, womp. Like, well, he's like,
if it's the first link, though, is they just put it in his pocket? Like, it probably takes a while to get a full.
Yeah, chain. You're right.
I don't know how that works.
He did say, when he saw you had to do the copies, the guy, he said, did you expect a reward? Mm-hmm. Sam was like, well, maybe, you know.
Well, that's what I thought. He's going to get something for it, but instead he got his reward was not being expelled from the Citadel.
Yeah, that's...
he did go against direct orders. So
yeah, exactly. I felt like it was a pretty... it could have been a lot worse for him. So I thought it was okay. I thought it was...
I mean, what he did worked, and what he did was right, but in the end it was wrong because he did go against orders. What if he would have contaminated himself and contaminated the whole area?
The Maester was right. It could have backfired. It could have been a lot worse, and that's why we don't do it.
Exactly.
All right. And then we move on to the war room. And then Danny they now realize that their fleet is destroyed. So Danny wants to defeat Euron by flying her dragons and burning them. But Tyrion says the risk is too great. And they decide to focus on Casterly Rock. And they discussed that battle. It was going to be very difficult. And this scene, at first, to me, on first viewing, was kind of confusing. Because I was like, is this a hypothetical? Like, is this going... Because, like, is this what Tyrion is describing of what's going to happen, or what would happen if they did it traditionally? And
I thought he was describing what was actually happening at first.
Mm-hmm.
No, to Nick's point, I could see you know, it's just a hypothetical, and then they'll show another scene of actually how it turned out kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I actually thought, like, the whole attack on the walls where you're seeing all the Unsullied killed, that was like, oh, if we did it the traditional way, this is what would happen.
Yeah.
But we're going to go with my plan, which is go in through this little crack here. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. But then I was like, oh, wait. So that those people really did die at the wall? Like, I didn't – like, I just thought it was very strange, very kind of Guy Ritchie the way it was shot. I was like, oh. But it's good. Like, so, like I said, they're describing – the way they're going to attack Casterly Rock, and Tyrion says, well, my dad designed all this stuff for the defense, but what he didn't do was design the sewers, and I did this. So Grey Worm and a small – it's kind of like very Trojan horse type thing. They sneak in and defeat from the inside, but then they're duped, though, because when they get in, Grey Worm's like, where are the Lannisters? Where's the army that's supposed to be inside this fort? And then they finally look over the wall to see that the Greyjoy's armada has now arrived and is burning all of the Unsullied ships. So now the Unsullied are trapped at Casterly Rock. So now Dany's screwed even more. And that she doesn't have – all she has left now is her three dragons and the Dothraki army.
Yep, she's blown it.
Oh, and then, so what was neat, though, also about this is that, so we see this happening, and then we see the Lannister army approaching, and we find out it's actually, they're approaching Highgarden. And then Bronn's there. It's the first time we've seen Bronn in a while.
Doesn't say anything.
Yeah, but he's doesn't there, say you know.
Oh. Yeah. And then, and it, I guess they blew their budget, I guess, in those dragons early episode, because they don't really show much of the battle for... Highgarden. It just shows the army approaching, and then they're inside.
I don't think we needed to see it.
Well, I don't know. For like, oh, both of these places. That's what I mean. Like, both Highgarden and Casterly Rock are huge castles, and they're supposed to be basically like all castles, impregnable. And in both of them, the castles didn't look like really what they're supposed to be, because Casterly Rock is supposed to be taller than the wall. It's supposed to be a huge mountain. And then when we see it, we're like, oh, it's just one wall.
And with it's a same secret with, entrance.
With a secret entrance, yeah. And it's the same as with Highgarden. Highgarden is this beautiful white castle. It's a circular castle with, like, three-tiered walls and gardens all in it. And, like, thorny – like, most of their defenses are natural defenses, like so, like, thorny shrubs and other things like that that most people don't want to go through. And so we didn't see any of that either. It just – you just see Jaime arrive, and then the Queen of Thorns just go, is it done? It is done. And you're like, oh, well, it's kind of let down. But, I mean, it's still a great scene. It's just like, oh, no fighting.
Well, to your point, if this was an earlier season when, you know, the pace was a bit slower, you know, this could have been, you know, three episodes, the little battle that they had that took 5 seconds on the show today or exactly. Last night.
I mean, they have to have the budget now. I mean, they're getting so many viewers.
But I think at the point was more the scene at the end than anything right. else. I mean, that's to me that's what I didn't need a battle for the scene to make it work for me. I mean, I've seen enough battles. You know, I get it. They took over. They won. They had an overpowering army. They caught them by surprise. And the scene at the end was fantastic. So.
Mm-hmm. So
that's just me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. And then Lady Tyrell kind of goes, you know, we were expecting the battle to be at Casterly Rock. And Jaime, which I thought was a really neat shout out, you know, because he goes, I did the same thing Robb Stark did to me. He goes, I created a diversion. You know, they thought we were going high and we went low.
Yep. So, and, again, for all of Tyrion's thinking he's smart, like his own brother kind of outsmarted
him. That's true. Yeah, I didn't think about it that way. Yeah, his own brother.
Because in war, anything, in any game, you have to keep everyone off guard, and they didn't. They just went with the same basic plan. There was no, you know, other than climbing underneath the sewer. So where he had, I mean, that was a clever plan, but he got outsmarted.
For Tyrion, he should have known that there was no money at Casterly Rock, and he should have known that the money was actually with the Tyrells.
Right.
So
he didn't know that.
How do you not know that the Lannisters were out of money?
because he was already gone when Tywin told Cersei that, and Jaime wasn't there, but Tywin told Cersei. Where was Tyrion? Tyrion in the episode that it happens. Tywin says that the money's gone, but Tyrion wasn't there, so he didn't know. I mean, that's what you could claim anyway.
Okay. All right. Fine.
So anyway, they get to the conversation between the Queen of Thorns and Jaime. He says, so how are you going to do it? How are you going to kill me? And Jaime starts to tell her all the ways Cersei had imagined killing her, but he convinced her otherwise and pours a little bit of poison into her goblet of wine. And she kind of finally admits that because it's always been rumored that you loved Cersei, and that you poor fool, she'll be the end of you, and that Cersei's a disease, and you're going to regret that you're spreading it. Then she chugs the wine, and basically she says, well, is it going to be painful? And he says, no. And what gets you is the end of the admittance, is that she says, I hate to die the way Joffrey did. Because, spitting bile and foaming at the mouth. And she goes, I didn't really mean for him to die that way. But you have to understand, I'd never seen that poison work before. And so,
so good.
And she says, tell Cersei, I want her to know it was me. And then Jaime's just kind of like, "Rrr." But I think we had discussed this back in season 5, that we already knew that the Queen of Thorns killed Jaime. I mean, killed Joffrey. Joffrey, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because I want to say she told Margaery that she did it.
Well, she did. She said, she goes, do you think I'd let you marry that monster?
Right, okay.
And but that's why, to me, the battle would have just been anticlimactic, because this is a scene that sold it on me. Because she, even dying, she won.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she completely, Jaime's there like, all right, Cersei had all these ways to kill you, but I said, no, I talked her out of it. We're just going to let you drink this poison. You can die gracefully. And as she's dying, she just basically says, yeah, I killed your son. Yeah. It was me.
It was a good end for the character that always had a sharp tongue and a sharp wit, and that she got to go out that way. I know a lot of people were sad for the death of the character, but I thought it was a pretty darn good ending on a show where there's been a lot of unjust endings to the characters.
Now, does Jaime go back and tell Cersei, down to they understand that Tyrion wasn't the one who killed Joffrey?
I don't know. Like, if I had to bet, I would think that Jaime will not return to King's Landing anytime soon.
I don't think he ever thought, because he still loved his brother, I never thought he actually did it.
Who?
No, but Cersei believes it.
Cersei believes it. Cersei believes it.
Not Jaime, but I'm...
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Jaime's basically got confirmation that it probably wasn't
Tyrion. Yeah, it wasn't Tyrion. But, yeah, and that's why he let him go, because he didn't believe him, that he was capable of killing him, even though he hated him.
Right.
But I don't think Jaime's going to return to King's Landing anytime soon. I think he'll march north and try to pick off the Unsullied on horseback as they're trying to cross, the country from Casterly Rock to King's Landing.
Yeah.
And I suspect that something will happen in King's Landing, and while he's away, and then we'll see.
All right. I can't wait for next Sunday. Actually, if you want, I guess you can find it online right now, right?
I hate that. Can we just talk about that for a second?
Oh, yeah.
I hope nobody, and people will, but I think, if spoilers go down, I'll be really ticked off. They probably will. But two, it's just like, it's only a week, and the people that did this obviously had malintent.
So
I just wish there was a way that the community together could just ban it and not support it.
I will say it right now. I will not watch it till Sunday.
I will make the pledge.
It will bug me, though, if I get spoiled by someone. I'll say this right now. Anyone spoils me on Facebook or Twitter, you're gone. I don't care if you're a family member. You're gone.
You're dead to me.
I mean, it's one thing if you want to do it and want to watch it, fine, but keep it to yourself and don't spoil the rest of the world that loves waiting till Sunday to watch the show.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's our thoughts, and we're sticking to them. All right, well, we don't have any feedback this week, but we do have our favorite segment, What Happens in the Books Stays in the Books, with Nicholas Dunn. Nick, what do you have for us this week?
Okay. So, there was a couple little things I thought were odd of what they decided to do with Cersei and the Iron Bank. That was really the only book things. Aside from the castles, which we already talked about, how Casterly Rock and Highgarden are different. So Cersei does meet in Feast of Crows with the Iron Bank, but it's not to this. It's just basically saying that the Iron Bank is trying to collect their debts, saying, like, you know, you owe us money. And she's like, oh, I don't have any money to pay you, but I'll get it for you because the Lannisters always pay their debts. But what was funny to me about this scene was that Cersei says that the Iron Bank made money from the slave trade, which is insane because Braavos was founded by escaped slaves, and that's why it's a free city. And so slavery has been outlawed in Braavos since its creation, and they actually have made nearby cities outlaw slavery, and that's what one of their goals is. This is to get rid of slavery altogether. And so the fact that she pointed that out was really odd why they chose to put that line in the show when it's blatantly not true.
But could it be true?
I mean,
there's a number of places say, yeah, we're against that, but then they got some underground little thing working. Oh, publicly we're against it, but we're bringing in a lot of cash.
Yeah, well, the only thing
they're all about the money, so
right.
I believe it.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could think about was like, okay, maybe she means it and that businesses that they chose to give loans to were making goods from slave labor. But other than that,
if they truly wanted to get rid of slavery, they wouldn't loan any money out to people who use slave labor.
Exactly. And it just felt odd for me as a book reader to go like, why is that in there?
Well, so, someone who hadn't read the books, I'm going to say it could possibly happen.
But the actual conversation is actually with John, because the bank of Braavos guy actually went to the wall when John was, this is before John gets stabbed and all that. And the conversation is more with John in that, it's like, who's he going to back? And then the Iron Bank has always been weary of the Targaryens because they were escaped slaves from Valyria, and they were trying to get away from Targaryens and everyone else who owned slaves. And so they don't want to back them for this reason, because they're descendants of slaves.
How did they amass their wealth to be the bank, the Iron Bank?
I mean, it's kind of the same thing as like with Venice, Italy, you know, and all the same thing. It's just they were a free independent city, and it's just from shipping, I guess. I'd have to go back and read the history of that, of actually how they amassed their wealth. But that's why they also have, it's very much like Venice, Italy, and it's a town full of little bitty islands, and that's why every religion is represented, every culture is represented. It's just a mass cultural city. Right. But that's it for as in like books. I've got some my theories here. So, I mean, one I already kind of touched on was that, you know, Melisandre and Varys, when they said they must die here, you know, I said, you know, because we already have seen that Melisandre is old, and Varys had his genitals burned, and then the flames talked to him. So it's like, did he die? And was he brought back to life, and he just doesn't know it? Or, because he was so young? Yeah. And is this also keeping with Jon Snow and Beric Dondarrion, and that anyone that is a servant of the Lord of Light, once the prophecy is fulfilled, what does she mean by they all must die here? Does that mean, did they want to die near the Lord of Light? Or because they're all servants of fire, do they serve a purpose against ice? You know, my mind is kind of rambling with this. It's just like, what does it mean?
Because Varys did look shocked when she said it.
Yeah.
I mean, he because usually he doesn't look... He has a great poker face. He never looks like he's, you know... And he was looking at her like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
He's never caught off guard, but he was caught off guard by that one.
Well, it's not every day you tell you're going to die somewhere. Like, you learn the location of your death, so...
Right. And then my big theory, which is still kind of okay, but maybe a little debunked now, because of the gold, is that they kind of hit you over the head a little bit with the mob, as in, like, they made a point of keeping the mob happy, because you see it with Euron marching in, if, like, they're cheering him, but they're booing the women. You see Jaime saying that to Euron, saying, like, you know, when he's saying, isn't this great keeping the people happy? And he goes, these same people were spitting on her weeks ago.
Yeah, that was a great line.
And then you see it with Sansa thinking about the people and how food is scarce and they need to wrangle it all in. Well, you know, think about it. You even said too tonight, Jack, the people were starving not too long ago and now they have food to throw.
Right.
So there's war. The war has basically been going on this entire show. It was like, and food is running scarce and winter is coming.
Right.
And if you remember the vision Danny had in season 2, you saw the Red Keep for a half a second and the roof was all burned out. Now, most of us, including myself, thought this meant the dragons were probably going to burn the Red Keep. But what if it's not? What if, there's my gold thing, what if Cersei, in order to repay the Iron Bank, decides to raise taxes on everybody? You know, and before that, you know, the rumor of her and Jaime finally gets out and people are like, oh my God, it's brother and sister. And then they're raising taxes. And all of a sudden she flips from being like a good queen to someone who's not, they're not fearing her anymore because they're mad that she's driving up taxes or whatnot. And they decide to revolt and they burn down the Red Keep instead. And then Jaime's away with the army and she's vulnerable. So that was just my thought of like, this could happen.
I guess could, but like, I think she got the payment back.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It got debunked.
So. Plus, if these people could throw away food so easily, a few more pennies ain't going to kill them in taxes.
Well, you never know. Or maybe just some more wildfire blows up and then blows up the Red Keep, too. So
that's true. That could happen, maybe.
But anyway. All right.
But I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was excellent.
I agree. It was very... I enjoyed it. Again, some people might not like the fast pacing. Some people like the fast pacing. I personally like the fast pacing, but I'm not a book purist like Nick is. All right.
Yeah. Well, you kind of just feel, get that Nick? Way. Well, like you get that way. When you read a book and you have a visualization in your head, that's right. Just kind of how you see it, and then someone else changes it.
Yeah, you want the pace of the book, whereas Jay and I haven't read the books. I've seen the ship sail. I've seen battles. I don't need that. As long as the story to me is clever and keeps me a little off guard and is interesting from start to finish, I'll give them a walk. Because I'm usually the first one to pick on a show. Someone from New York is getting to one side or the other in 10 minutes. There's no way that happens. But on this thing, it's been such a great season. I'm not going to pick apart. If it had been a terrible season, I'd be right with you, Nick.
Well, it's a great season. I've enjoyed it. You know, like I said, the only thing I liked this episode, the only thing I just kind of felt that the characters kind of got a 180 a little too quick, and that, you know, Bran got to all of a sudden serious Bran, and Danny got to like, I'm queen a little.
But again, like we said with Bran, he's like 90 now.
Well, he's beyond time because he is, you know.
I know.
He's ever present.
I mean, how's that girl still dragging him around? I mean, he's got to be...
Man, you know her muscles are just jacked right now.
I was gonna say, you'd think she'd be more buff than she is now, having to carry that.
She'd be like Conan the Barbarian. Must bring you here.
She did look a little tired in this episode. Like, oh, I finally made it. Yes.
Finally, he's growing by every episode. He's bigger. Yeah,
I mean, he's like 8 feet tall now. I mean, it's got.
And now there's snow. He's got three eyes. I can't do this anymore.
All right. Well, that is a good place to end this episode. If you'd like to give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Calling time.
So that's 385-309-0311. Calling time with your questions, comments,
and theories.
Also, send an email to gameofthronespodcast@gmail.com. That's Gameofthronespodcast@gmail.com. facebook.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JandJack group. And if you'd like to become a patron, you can do so by going to patreon.com/JandJack or click on the Become a Patron link on jandjack.com. All of our podcasts are listener supported. Majority of what we pays for the posting and everything and what we pay to our podcasters comes from you, the listener. So thank you so much. Especially want to thank Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Molly the Millennial, and Ed the Mailman. Thank you, or Mail Per Carrier. Thank you so much for your patronage.
Such a sexist, Jay.
There's a lot of other podcasts going on right now. We just recently did a Ramblecast After Dark, which it was said that their favorite reason or the best reason to become a patron is to enjoy the live show, which it was a long one.
It was, but
most of the people stayed in the chat from start to finish. Now, they could have fallen asleep, and we don't know, but yeah, they stayed, so...
Oh, man. Also, if you buy anything on Amazon.com, you can still help out Jay and Jack Productions by using the link jayandjack.com/Amazon. Anything you purchase on there using that link, a small percentage of that purchase will go to the Jay and Jack production fold. All right. That is it for this week's Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. We'll see you next time. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.